daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Josh Neighbors here with Locked On Big 12 Podcast. Today it is Monday, September 27th, 2021, and we have a whole lot of Big 12 football from the weekend to get to. Before we do, make sure you guys subscribe to the channel. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. We're at LO Big 12. You can follow me at Josh Neighbors _. If you're listening on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, once again, find us on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, go and find us, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. You can find us in those places. All right, I think that's enough for those pleasantries. Also, make sure you guys follow the other Locked On Big 12 podcasts, Oklahoma, TCU, and Locked On Pokes. So it's Locked On Pokes, Locked On Sooners, and then also Locked On Horned Frogs. Make sure you follow all of those as well for more team-specific coverage. Obviously, we're going to touch on the Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and TCU games in this podcast, but for a more in-depth look from the actual team perspective, you guys can go there. All right, we've got six games to get to today, a whole lot of Big 12 football from the weekend, and we have to start with what I think was the result of the weekend. Some would argue maybe Oklahoma's result was the biggest because it is, you know, they're Oklahoma, they're still the kings of the conference. You have to start there. I disagree. I think the place you have to start is in Waco, Texas, where Baylor defeated Iowa State 31-29. Now, I was wrong about this result. I thought Iowa State's defense was going to be a puzzle that was difficult for the Baylor offense to solve, and at times it was. At times they were able to, you know, to get some pressure there. At times they're able to cause Gary Bohannon to be a bit uncomfortable. And they did need some big-time special teams plays to really spur their offense on. But I thought their offense was good enough to win this game. I think the idea of this being a team win, it's something Dave Aranda actually talked about, is the fact this was like a culture game. It was a culture win. I know it's stuff that people use all the time, but when you talk about Dave Aranda's tenure in Waco, you talk about a year one that was mired in, you know, a poor season, but most of all mired by the fact that he was a first-time head coach at the Division I level, taking over a team in the middle of a global pandemic in a place like Waco, Texas. It's not necessarily a program that really just, you know, it kind of, you know, fixes itself. It's good to go. It takes some building. And obviously he made some mistakes, you know, ends up firing offensive coordinator, getting a new one in Jeff Grimes. And what we like about Dave Aranda so much is how introspective he is. If you're new to this program, it's something that I've been harping on all offseason is how really reflective Dave Aranda is as a coach, as a person, about the choices he has made, about the mistakes he has made, about the players he is bringing in, how he's trying to always correct and improve. And I think this was a prime example of a team that really has found itself. I mean, they were 3-0 to start the season, but we were asking a lot of questions of how real was Baylor's start? How good were the Baylor Bears? You know, we saw a lot of those zone concepts they like to run. A lot of them were effective. Like we saw an awesome touchdown run today on Saturday. It was a good example. Tight end chips a guy inside. They pull the guard, the tackle to the outside. Guy's block. I think it was Gary Bohannon on the carry to the outside for a touchdown run. Like that is coaching. That is, you know, play design. That is execution. That is everything you want to see. And so that's development right there. That is these guys getting better. And the reason why I say it's a team win, because you go look at the stat lines, the total yards, 479 for Iowa State, 282 for Baylor, 9 penalties for 100 yards for Baylor to just 3 for 25 for Iowa State. Both were even in turnovers, time of possession favored Iowa State by nearly 11 minutes in this game. And so you go back and you think, well, you know, what was really the game breaker in this? It was Treston Ebner's touchdown return. Also had a return as well that put them in really good field position. So you take those, I mean, he accounted really for, you know, he set them up basically for 10 points, and it's 10 points that you would not have had otherwise. It was just left up to the offense. Obviously they could have scored on one of the touchdown drive, but they, you know, they didn't have to because of the return. And then also the return that set him up for a field goal. Obviously the offense didn't execute enough to get a touchdown. So he basically set him up for those 3 points. So basically, Ebner accounted for 10 points in the special teams game. You subtract 10, they lose this football game, in 29-21. Obviously, once again, things could have gone differently. But you see what I'm saying of the importance of there. Once again, the defense held at really important points. Iowa State had five drives of 50-plus yards, four ended in field goals, one ended in a turnover. So you talk about, they had other drives, 50 yards that scored, but I'm just saying there were five separate occasions in which they did have long drives, but they did not result in touchdowns. Baylor's defense bent, as the old saying goes, but they did not break. That was important as well. And look, Iowa State got too far behind. They have playmakers, but it feels like there's just not a lot of variety. Like, I thought Allen was awesome at tight end. Kohler, obviously, really good at tight end. Xavier Hutchinson, I'm a little lower on Xavier Hutchinson than most people are. I think he's a good player, but not really is he the all conference player? But he says he is. Is kind of the question I'm wondering there. I thought Brock Purdy actually played a really good game. I thought Breece Hall was phenomenal. He runs so hard. I think people look at kind of the way he cuts, the way he maneuvers, the way he moves, and thinks about a lot of finesse that's in his game, and there is plenty of finesse. He's not the fastest guy out there, but he is a fluid runner who, in my opinion, finishes through contact really well. He's able to bounce and, kind of almost use guys like a pinball, and he doesn't appear to be that kind of sized player. But he just brings it all together. For a back who doesn't have that top-end speed, he's not – Bijan Robinson's – I love him so much. Perfect example. Like, he is different than Bijan in many respects about the way he runs. But both are effective ways of getting the job done, right? You could argue maybe the way Bijan does it is so pretty because it's just like he is the best player in the field. He's the fastest, most athletic, best twitch, all those kind of things. But Bijan does it in a way that is – knowledgeable, that he knows angles and understands gaps and how to hit holes and how to do it effectively. Once again, not saying he's fast, but it's not like he is always the fastest guy on the field. It feels like, at least. So I love the way he played. I mean, he's absolutely fantastic. Once again, I thought Brock Purdy played well. He kind of has that Romo spin away from pressure. Tony Romo, if you go back and watch, always had this really nice spin. Like, if you pull your left, because he's a right-handed quarterback, if you spin with your left shoulder first, kind of spin back, you kind of do a 360, right? Kind of circling, if you're taking the snap, you're facing this way, circling back that way, and then kind of coming around towards the left side of the field and squaring yourself over again, and then throwing. Brock Purdy has actually gotten that done down pretty well. The interception he threw, I saw where it was going. It was going to be a tough throw. He had to get it over a linebacker. He threw it too low. I mean, the ball got tipped and by the defensive line and then caught by that linebacker. But if you look at the angle where he threw it, it actually was going to be a pretty difficult throw, in my opinion, at that angle at least, to get it over top of the linebacker and get it to where it needed to go. So I would say it's like a half interception. I mean, it was a great play to get your hand up and get your hand in the way there. I'm not really sure I'm gonna fault him too much for this. But look, they just didn't finish drives. And I also thought that Baylor, their defense, not necessarily, it wasn't a super high sack count, I don't think, but they got some pretty good pressure on, on Iowa State. Like, pretty much, it felt like the second half, they were really in Brock Purdy's kitchen for a lot of it. They only ended up getting two sacks in this game, but it felt like they only have it says one QB hurry, but like, if you go back and watch, it felt like Brock Purdy was under some relative duress. I thought the Baylor defensive line did a pretty good job of kind of making things a bit uncomfortable for him back there. It felt like he was really, had to move around, had to work some things out in the second half. And mostly, some of the moving the pocket was intentional, but it felt like some of it Brock Purdy ended up having to do. That drive with the interception, like, that was the big killer, because it felt like Iowa State was going to go down the field, score, and there's going to be time left for them to get a stop and score again. That interception was huge. The Baylor defense forcing it. Once again, I'm not going to put it all on Brock Purdy, but them getting the job done at that spot felt like the turning point of this game. What a win for Dave Aranda's group. Gary Bohannon, once again, they brought him in. I said this all season. Not because he is the most talented, but because he is the guy that could manage the offense the best. And in this game, he did a good job. He did lose the fumble, but 14 of 19, 162 and two scores, had the rushing touchdown as well. He just manages the offense well, and for a Baylor offense that's still growing and improving and learning with their new coach, Jeff Grimes, who's done an excellent job. I mean, they might have a tough time keeping him there in Waco for too long if they keep this up. But this is a profound win. I think it's the way to say it. It's like this is a profound result. And for Iowa State, man, you know, to some degree, it's still right in front of you. They could still win the Big 12 Conference. They still have, you know, I think it's safe to say that we don't believe Baylor is going to go undefeated. They've got a really difficult game this week against Iowa State coming Oklahoma State coming up. So I you know, plenty of times I'm still lose. But Iowa State has, you know, they're unranked now. They're a team that started up top. And look, this is actually a game I didn't think they played horribly, like pillar to post. The special teams, that's what got them. Not finishing the drives got them. Baylor was just better than them in this game. They were just better on that day. And if you play that game in neutral field, you put that game in Ames, you know, the result probably goes a different way. But Baylor was just better. And that seems to be a theme here, is that like Iowa was a lot better than Iowa State was. You and I was almost better. They've got a lot of things to straighten out. And look, still a successful season could definitely be had by Iowa State. I mean, this team, this group is so veteran, so experienced. If they kicked it into gear and won six straight games, you know, would we be surprised? Probably a little bit, but like it wouldn't be, you know, if once you think about it, it wouldn't be a total shock at all. So Baylor, a huge win, getting it done against Iowa State. All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll move on to some other games. But today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Guys, this is the best way to play daily fantasy. Basically, it's just they set a line and you go up against that line, right? So Brock Purdy over under 1.5 interceptions, Brock Purdy over under 200 passing yards, Spencer Rattler over under as many passing yards, turnovers, field goals, maybe whatever you want, they've got there at Prize Picks. You go there today, the app is available in most states. They have informative videos that show you how to play, explain what they've got there. A lot of fun, different contests and games going right now. Use promo code LOCKEDON also for a deposit bonus there at Prize Picks. Once again, LOCKEDON, locked on for a promo code at Prize Picks. A little bit of sparkling water here as we move forward throughout the show. All right. This one, Oklahoma 16. West Virginia 13. So shout out to John Williams, Locked On Sooners. First of all, he's gotten more on this game. Like a win is a win, sure. We can go with that approach if you want to. Here's kind of my take on Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma might have a bunch of games this year, and maybe next week is another example. We already saw it against Tulane. We already saw it against Nebraska. We saw it against West Virginia, where like it feels like they might lose the game, but it kind of the inevitability of you effing up and them taking advantage of it occurs. Like to see Oklahoma, like just if you want to follow their trajectory, look at their record and then look at their spot in the AP poll. I don't, you know, the AP poll is not always a great way to look at things, but just think about the fact that they started off number two and they're number four and they played this game. And now they're number six in the latest AP poll. Like, they're not playing well, but they're still winning. And Tulane's a decent team. It's a good win. Nebraska might be average. We're kind of still out on them. West Virginia's besides Clemson, like, probably the best 2-2 team in the country, right? I mean, they have a good win over Virginia Tech. They were really close against Maryland, and they were absolutely, you know, on the doorstep here of winning this game in Norman, Oklahoma. Think about the fact that they played – Maryland is undefeated on the road, and they also played in Norman this game against Oklahoma. So the kind of the theme here for Oklahoma, once again, is that it feels like this might be their MO. Now, the worst case scenario for them is that they have a game where the offense plays like it has been, and the defense looks like the defense from the Tulane game. That is a scenario which is a nightmare scenario, and it's also a scenario in which the Oklahoma Sooners lose. On the other side of that token, is there a team in the Big 12 Conference that boasts both a good enough defense and a good enough offense to make this happen, to make that situation occur? Because there is a certain level of you now that Tulane game was the first game it was weird, but Tulane's got some talented players, and as talented as they are, Oklahoma's going to run up against some more guys who are more talented. Like Texas would be a good example. I don't necessarily think Texas defense, like they could be had, right? But if they have a good half or think something like that, like you have to think, like, is there a team, you know, I think Iowa State, the idea of Iowa State was that team that could press Oklahoma, but it feels like they're really that team might not be out there. But I think Sooner fans are still worried nonetheless. West Virginia had the ball in this game driving down the field. Their center takes a, what was it, false start, I think it was. Center has a penalty and then snaps the ball by Jared Daigie and basically just kills their drive. They turn it over. Now, when they turn it over, or not turn it over, they punt it back. But like push came to shove, and Oklahoma went down the field and got a field goal. So I think there is that element of this that we have to mention. Like that's kind of what good teams do, right? I said the Oklahoma thing, like Oklahoma State by hook or by crook. Like that's kind of applies right here. Just good teams, just they'll pounce on you. Like once that ball was snapped by Jared Daigie, the game was over. The game was essentially over at that point because, you know, it's like, oh, you can't do that on the road against a team like Oklahoma. This game felt like, you know, it could be interesting because West Virginia's first drive, they just went down the field and punched Oklahoma in the mouth with an 8-plus-minute drive. And that ended the little bit of Garrett Green in there. Jared Daigie looked sharp. They were converting third downs. It was a brilliant drive from Neil Brown's outfit. Now, the problems for them continue in the second half of games, folks. West Virginia has played 6 quarters against Power 5 teams. 6 quarters being second half quarters, I mean. So obviously Maryland second half, Tech second half, and then Oklahoma second half. In those 6 quarters, in that time span, they have scored a total of 6 points. They have 6 points in that amount, let's say in 90 minutes of second half football against Power 5 teams. That is absolutely horrible. Their offense is not producing. This was a question of how many times could you lean on your defense and ask them to make it happen? And the answer is not that often. So for West Virginia, that's the key for them. The defense is really spectacular. It is. They were asked to do a lot against Virginia Tech. Obviously, they had a couple moments. They gave some stuff up, but they got the crucial stops they needed. They were put in some bad spots, in my opinion, in that Maryland game. But in this game today, they sack Spencer Rattler 4 times. They were able to force a turnover. Oklahoma running the football, you know, they had a pretty decent day, but they had a really rough day. Throwing the football, they had a good day. Running the football, they had a pretty rough day. And that is a big tribulation to the defensive line of West Virginia. Now also Oklahoma's offensive line. I'm going to ask Dave Eichert about this. Today I'm working Big 12 today with him on SiriusXM Radio. What was the last offensive line Oklahoma had that was this bad, this poor? And I think it'll be tough to find, right? Like I think it's gonna be tough to find because this group is not getting much. They're not run blocking very well. Pass blocking is iffy. I know the West Virginia's defensive front's pretty good, but it feels like, you know, it feels like what Oklahoma needs to do is they need to have a Caleb Williams specific package. They need to use him in the way that Florida used Emory Jones back in the day, like 2 years ago when Kyle Trask was there and Felipe Franks were there. They would bring him in certain situations. That feels like something that Oklahoma needs to do. They need to consider moving forward. So the fans chanting Caleb Williams, like, I don't even understand how talented Spencer Rattler is. Does he make great decisions all the time? No, the interception was tipped, but it was still a bad throw. Decision-making obviously has to improve. It needs to get better. They would not beat a team like an Alabama today. They'd not beat a Georgia today. But I trust Lincoln Riley groups. Like, you know, it just feels like they almost have to get out of the month of September and kind of leave that behind them, because that's what last year happened. And they were able to turn the corner in the month of October, and they were gangbusters from then on. So they've had 4 games now. They're through a third of the schedule. Can they put together that back half like they did last year? That's the big question for Oklahoma moving forward. I do not think Spencer Rattler should be benched. I don't think putting Caleb Williams behind a bad offensive line, like, as a starter is going to be something that's going to be super effective. I think using him in certain ways to move the pocket and roll around, I'm a huge fan of using a quarterback, but a second quarterback, if you're going to have him throw some, like have packages for him, but he needs to throw the football. He needs to be a guy who's like moving around, not just running the football with him, because then it gets a bit predictable and defenses pick up on it. He needs to have the threat of both. So maybe you put in five or six plays that Caleb Williams can run to be effective, a change of pace guy. Maybe throw him in the middle of drives, you know, the same way West Virginia was able to do that with Garrett Green. They think there's some opportunities there. All right, next game, Texas 70, Texas Tech 35. Number one, first thing on this game, Tyler Shuck. I hope you are getting better. Tyler Shuck breaks his collarbone in this game, gets removed. He's going to be out until November. Henry Columbia actually came in the game, made a pretty good accounting of himself, but that is number one concern for Texas Tech right now. Excuse me, take another sip here. So 15 of the 22 possessions of this game, and this is not counting the end of halves, ended up being touchdowns. This game was never close. It was never going to be close. I mentioned this when we were doing the preview show last week. Texas, when they play athletes who are not as good as them, and no disrespect to Texas Tech, but Texas level above, they feast. And they feasted in this game. Casey Thompson was really good, saved the interception, but whether it was the run or the pass, Texas just had their way with a Texas Tech defense that is still not very good. I thought it was an important game for Matt Wells to maybe show the 3-0 start was something they could build off of. And obviously, they lose Tyler Shuck, but Tyler Shuck threw a pick six in this game. Did not look he was completing passes at the beginning of the game, but it wasn't like this. It was some overwhelming effort. Speaking of overwhelming efforts, Bijan Robinson, 137 on the ground, 54 through the air, had a touchdown in the air too, was absolute game breaker. Roshan Johnson had two scores. Xavier Worthy, we've been talking about him. You know, Texas, it's been a while since they've had a game-breaking wide receiver, and it appears that Xavier Worthy has the opportunity to be that next game-breaking wide receiver for Texas that we have not seen in a long time. But Texas has a balanced offensive attack. That's what they have. Their offensive line is playing well. They've got the opportunity to have a really balanced offensive attack in this game. They were all over Texas Tech from the word go. This was an absolute blowout from the offset. And once again, it was like a situation where it was like that Texas had just had better athletes. And for Casey Thompson, you know, I thought he should have been the guy from the beginning. Sarkisian's in that building every single day. People kind of question me and said, hey, he knows what he's doing. I think it's important that he acknowledges maybe at the end of the year he made a bit of a mistake with that decision and against inferior athletes, the ULL team's good team, inferior athletes, though. Texas had their way. Against Arkansas, the playing field was a lot more level. Arkansas pushed him around. Hudson Carr did not look very good. And Casey Thompson gives you the element, the ability to spread out. Now, I know that he did the rollout through the interception. So there is a little bit of that. But he just seems to be a better option. He was comfortable in this game. Obviously, throwing the five touchdowns is really impressive. 18 for 23, 303 and five scores. Had a touchdown run, too. Six total in a conference game. I don't care how bad the defense is. It's a really impressive effort. For Texas Tech, man, that defense has got to get cleaned up. 70 points is now not all of them. Once again, we're offense touchdowns, and some you know came late in this game. But Texas put it on. Texas absolutely put it on them in this game. I mean, think about that third quarter, the second quarter rather. You know, Texas ends up scoring 28 points in that quarter. They end up scoring another 21 in the third quarter. So this game was almost a 30-point game, a 40-point game, as they headed into the fourth quarter. Got it cleaned up. And for Matt Wells, man, like you think about it, this game, this is one of those games where you need to put your stamp and get a landmark win because you didn't get it last year and you got absolutely ran out of the building. So a lot for them to look at. Once again, Henry Columbia has a lot of experience, and they've got good guys in the backfield. They've been running the football very well this year. They didn't run it as well in this game, but they still have some opportunities down the line, and they've got a couple playmakers in the passing game as well. So we'll see if Texas Tech can make some adjustments moving forward. All right, one more break before we get to the last few games we're going to talk about. Today's show is brought to you by Sweatblock. Sweatblock wipes, my friends. You can go and get them at CVS. You can go and get them online at Amazon or at sweatblock.com. If you go to sweatblock.com, use that promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON, Locked On, and you'll get 20% off there. Sweatblock wipes have been tested by firefighters on the Rachel Ray Show. They've been a bestseller on Amazon with 13,000 reviews. They've been a bestseller for almost 10 years now, which is really impressive to hold that spot for that long. They work up to 7 days per use. They've got a dry shirt guarantee as well. Once again, go to sweatblock.com to learn more and use that promo code Locked On for 20% off when you're there. Today's show is also brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting, best for you protein bar in the game today. They got coconut, almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, 17 to 18 grams of protein, only 130 to 180 calories, 4 to 5 grams of sugar, 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Also, the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. You go there today to built.com. That's built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, LOCKED15. You get 15% off at built.com. All right, Oklahoma State 31, Kansas State. It's actually not 29. It should be 20 in this game. It was Oklahoma State 31, Kansas State. We'll fix that real quickly. 20. So they're on the, for those of you who are listening, it's on the graphic. Now there it is. Oklahoma State 31, Kansas State 20. This game was really fun at the beginning. Back and forth action early on in this game. Fun first half. Second half really stagnated. Was not as close as a score indicated. This was not an 11-point football game. This felt like it was more in that 18 to 14 range where it was late in that first half into the third quarter. Oklahoma State's offensive line had their best game of the season, I thought. And in turn, the offense did. We always talk about this game being about blocking and tackling. You all know. If you don't know, if you're new to the show, totally fine. I really do believe the offensive line is the most important part. Like, you can say quarterback's the most important position, and sure it is. But if you don't have an offensive line, you know, we saw it a few years ago with Florida State and DeAndre Francois. Like, what's the whole point, right? You know, you're going to get the guy knocked into obscurity because it's really hard to play behind an offensive line that's really super poor. You're not going to get much done. It puts your offense in bad spots, puts your defense in bad spots. They were awesome. Like the way Oklahoma State's moving things around. They have that play-action screen deal they do where it's a fake to Jalen Warren, the outside guys pull, and then they slip Warren out as Sanders rolls to the right side. They slip Warren out to the left. It was really effective. Had a couple big plays using that play when Spencer Sanders had time in this game. He was very accurate. Oklahoma State jumped on a fumble in the end zone. Their defense was very strong. Kansas State was kept in the game by a couple big plays. Malik Knowles, you know, is one of those guys I think flies under the radar as one of the best wide receivers in the conference. Not only that, special teams player. He took a kickback for the touchdown. If you go back and watch this, it's absolutely spectacular kick returning thought process. You see him not really hit the full not really hit the gas. Some guys hit the gas from the beginning. You see him kind of get flipped over, tripped up, whatever it is. He was really smart and thoughtful about the way he hit a hole, got a really good block, hit it in the middle, cut to the outside, and then turned on the afterburners when it was time and left everybody in the dust. Nobody was close to catching Malik Knowles on that return. And then later on in the game, a special Deuce Vaughn moment. Had a really quiet game. I thought Oklahoma State would put a lot of emphasis on stopping him. They did so. They did stop him for the most part. Jaron Lewis comes under pressure, and it looks like he's basically sacked. Is able to dump it off to Deuce Vaughn. There's nobody there because kind of everybody's handling their assignments or, you know, gathered around Jaron Lewis. He's able to break it and go down, you know, I think it was like 40-some yards to the end zone for a score. This is the upshot for Kansas State. They've got a lot of really talent, really decent talent. And Matthew Bebe at tight end, Malik Knowles, Deuce Vaughn. Like, they've got some legitimately talented guys. This is the sad part about it. I wish they had Skylar Thompson, because now they're rotating guys. You know, the snap in the end zone, I think it was on the center for snapping it too hard. Will Howard's got to have that. Interception this game, too. Interception from Jaren Lewis in this game. It just feels like, you know, it's two options that they just prefer not to have. And maybe they can combine and get them a couple wins. They're going to be a tough out, as always. And their defense has played a lot better than I thought it, you know, than I thought it would, considering what they were missing. But it's an uphill climb for them without a guy. You know, that offense is built to be managed and to spread the ball out and to have a good quarterback who makes good decisions and takes care of the football throughout the game. That feels like it's a bit more in jeopardy now when they don't have Skylar Thompson. And difficult road environment. They caught Oklahoma State, who played their best game of the season. Thought Kansas State would cover in this game. Thought Oklahoma State would win, but Oklahoma State took care of business in a pretty impressive way. They get to 4-0. Kansas State 3-1, still a respectable 3-1 start for them on the season. Not sure what they do if they split time at quarterback. I assume they're going to moving forward. Maybe they should make one decision. I'm really a fan of when you go with one guy. I think it makes things better for continuity's sake. But we'll see what they do. For more individual coverage on Oklahoma State, go check out Locked On Pokes with Linda Godfrey. She'll have you covered on all things related to this game. But this was also awesome game from Spencer Sanders. Tay Martin was awesome this game. Great back shoulder throw on an awesome route from Tay Martin, that combining for a touchdown too. So a whole lot of things to like in this game from Oklahoma State. All right, moving on. SMU 42, TCU 34. I said SMU would cover. Did not think they would win. TCU, their defense in the back end especially is a complete – their defense everywhere in this game was a disaster. I know they intercepted three balls, but it felt like Tanner Mordecai had his way. Four on the air, one on the ground. SMU had two guys went over 100 yards on the ground too. I mean, they got whatever they wanted. And this brings up the concern that about Gary Patterson, you know, like – you know, his fastball, where is it? You know, does he still have it? And they got a nice 2-0 start, but the defense looked bad, and that's his unit. And, you know, then the offenses look good, which is really ironic. The offenses looked really strong in the first couple games, right? The offenses looked really strong, besides the fumble in the end zone, which you could argue, you know, potentially is a difference maker. But, you know, they've got playmakers on offense. The offense looks good. The defense is just all over the place. The secondary looked completely lost. There were complete coverage lapses. There were massive spots in coverage. I mean, TCU played an absolutely horrible game on defense because they tightened things up eventually against Cal. They did not tighten things up at all in this game. Credit to SMU for exploiting that. And we're going to talk to Stephen Simcox, Locked On Horned Frogs, later on in the week about what went wrong. But I was not watching this game intently. I went back and read about it and watched it afterwards. It just looked like TCU really didn't have a whole lot of answers. And they didn't do an excellent job of always, you know, capitalizing with those three extra possessions. I mean, the offense scores 34 points. You know, that's enough capitalization, in my opinion. They should have won this football game. 42 points is pretty much inexcusable. Once again, I know one of them came from fumble. But they usually hang their hat on defense. And as good as I thought it was a good game for Max Duggan, thought it was a really good game from Zach Evans. But as good as they were, it didn't matter because they couldn't stop SMU at all. Duke 52, Kansas 33. I'll give you guys a couple numbers here because I thought it was a good game from Jason Bean, kind of a good game for Jason Bean, a good game from Kwame Lassiter. Duke in the first half of games, basically this is how their season's gone. They have taken two leads into halftime, and in the third quarter of the other two games, they have been trailing by only one score against Baylor and CCU. They were down by one score in the third quarter. In the game against South Dakota and against Duke, they were leading at halftime. In the second half of games, they've been outscored by margins of 31-9, 31-0, 21-7, 14-10. That's 97 points for other teams, 26 for themselves. They are minus 71 in four games in the second half. The bad news, they have a massive problem. The good news, Lance Leipold knows what the problem is. It is finishing football games. It is getting from, you know, quarter from halftime to the end of the game with a respectable result. Now, a road loss by this many points, not the worst result in the world. You scored 33. It's pretty good for Kansas. They have to improve in the second half. And whether it's it might be a conditioning thing, which goes back to the fact that Lance Leipold came in late and maybe didn't get the, you know, they like the strength conditioning coach that they brought in. That's going to take some time. It's going to take some time for them to get that level of durability, to get that caliber of athlete, and no disrespect, but it's a lower level caliber of athlete, to get that caliber of athlete acclimated to kind of going at the pace, playing at that level for four quarters. That's really what they have to do, because they have been pretty close to other teams at the half. They are not getting boat raced in first half. They've had two leads, for Christ's sake, at halftime. They've been down one score against two teams that are one, Coastal Carolina, who was ranked or is ranked, and one Baylor, who is ranked now. But they ended up getting absolutely crushed in both of those games. Ended up losing by 25 plus in both of those games. That's what has to improve as they move forward in the second half. All right, a lot coming this week on Locked On Big 12. Going to have a conversation with Mark Daniels, the play-by-play man, the voice of the UCF Knights. He and I talk about the UCF move to the Big 12 Conference. That should be interesting. Hope you guys are going to enjoy that. We'll have our weekly round table on Wednesday, where we talk about, with John Williams, Stephen Simcox, and Linda Godfrey. We talk all things Big 12. We're going to have going to start having maybe a report on the incoming teams, the Big 12. How did Houston and Cincinnati and BYU, how do those, and UCF, how they all do the week previous? Start doing that as well. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at LOBig12. You can follow me at Josh Neighbors_. Until next time, my friends, as always, stay safe.